Hello and welcome back to The Dive, Season 3, Episode 2. We mean Season 3 as in third year of The Dive, not third split of The Dive. I'm not sure if like podcast naming conventions are standardized or anything, but usually it's
season. Blame you for it.
What? I didn't say anything. That was you. Other people do seasons in different ways, too. It's weird. Week one into the LCS. A lot of cool stuff happened. Team Liquid managed to jump out of the gates 2-0. A lot of hype teams like maybe the Golden Guardians did not start as well. So there's a lot to cover. What do you guys want to start with?
Yeah, it was a super exciting first week. I think the biggest thing that we have to set the table with is that Team Liquid dominance at the top, right? Mm-hmm. Because some people had questions. They're like, oh, you know, maybe they won't all be able to work together. After week one, everyone's like, okay, yeah, they're probably going to be the number one team and continue to be the number one team. Mm-hmm. Because they also had a decently difficult schedule. A lot of our top teams play the other top teams at the beginning of the season, and they beat both, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially when a lot of people thought, okay, well, C9, because they had that Hardcore Korean boot camp, their best chance is right now, right? Because Teal hasn't had as much practice. So you're going to get him Willis out or whatever, right? And then Teal won anyway, so it's kind of like, ooh, Teal's pretty good. Definitely looking like their offseason acquisitions are upgrades. Definitely looking like the favorites to repeat as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the schedule point is a good thing to keep in mind even throughout like the next 3 or 4 weeks. The fact that the top teams played the top teams and the bottom teams played the bottom teams is going to influence the schedule a lot going forward. I do think the Team Liquid versus C9 game was actually really close. Like that's a game you could watch and think that, hey, if they played again right afterwards, maybe C9 wins that one. So looking forward to that. And the Jensen on TL looked really good to begin with. And that's, I wonder if that assuages some people's doubts kind of down the line of like, will he be able to coexist or will his attitude happen? I mean, everything looked great for Team Liquid right off the bat.
Yeah. As you're saying too, for Cloud9, I think they also are one of the teams that look pretty strong. Niski at the beginning, you know, the first game, he's against Jensen, and you know, you miss some Zoe paddle stars and they start spamming Twitch chat with Niski. But then later on, he finds some kills on him, they win some team fights with it, and they start calling him Hitski again. and you kind of go through the roller coaster. How do you guys feel like this guy is going to mature with the team and build with this team? Because I think that Cloud9 are going to be one of the strong teams this split. Just not quite sure how to place them because we do have a lot of switches around it, especially in the mid lane.
I've got a lot of confidence. I think that he is going to grow into a fantastic mid laner. You know, he does seem to as well. He had an interview where he basically said just as much. He's very confident he'll be one of the best mid laners in the league by the end of the split. I mean, he improved, I think, a lot over the last couple of years. When you look at his MV days versus, you know, his days in Europe, and then coming back here, like, I think he is a very talented mid laner. A lot of the players that I've talked to have said that they think he's very good already. Certainly, he still has stuff to learn, but, you know, if you even think back to, like, Jensen's first game, I remember on Cloud9, I think he was down something like 100 or 150 CS against Bjergsen. I remember watching that in the studio.
I was going to say 40 at
it was like 10, it was 15. Like maybe I'm super, super, super exaggerating and misremembering.
He didn't get single minion.
But it was like, I remember watching that in the stands, and I have in my head that he was down over 100 CS. Maybe this is totally incorrect, but I think Cloud9 even won that game, as funny as that is. But regardless, I mean, his second game was obviously very impressive. Mm-hmm. Yes, who he messed up and kind of gave him a lead, but you saw like how dominant he could look with the lead. And he did, you know, turn it a very impressive game against 100 Thieves who, yeah, they had a rough weekend, but still a lot of people have them very high in the power rankings. So I still think, there's something we said for that.
Yeah. Looking at some of the other teams that are 2-0, and then we'll get to 100 Thieves and whether or not the 0-2 is alarming there. The quote-unquote surprising 2-0 teams are FlyQuest and Clutch. I had Clutch in the playoffs, unlike you guys, in my preseason power rankings. I'm willing to say that was a good call.
Wait, let me check. What games. Did I
put Our aggregated power rankings had them at 6th. I think I maybe had them 7th or something like that.
Aggregated wasn't 6th, I thought. I thought aggregated was lower.
No, they're
6th. Oh, Jat, better check your numbers here, brother. Right,
check
Jat,
the tapes.
Jat had them in 5th. We had them in 6th overall.
Okay.
Kobe had them in 6th. You had them in 5th. I had them in 7th. They were aggregate 6th.
Okay.
Okay. So I guess I didn't have
you, then me, then you.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I wasn't as overly.
And they turned in. They turned in. I think a really, really strong week. You know, they certainly, like, I think the biggest surprise, though, is how they performed.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking that, okay, if this team looks good, like, I believe that, you know, that Hooney could pop off and be dominating and really carry some games. And it wasn't, you know, like, wasn't obviously about that. DeMonte was extremely impressive.
Yeah.
And I think that was the biggest surprise. He got back-to-back player of the games. He was really the difference maker against TSM especially. But his Galio game in the first game was really impressive too. So I think that's an encouraging sign. You know, Hooney had one really good game, one like more average game, but DeMonte looked great.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say with Hooney is the first game we saw out of Hooney where he just spots, rushes Karthus in the jungle, like immediately ults and flashes over, kills him. Like, damn, this is how they're going to win some games. And then you see the game where he's up against Broken Blade and dies three, like just starts 0-3. Looks like it's going to be another one of those power feed Hooney games. And the fact that they win that one is, I think, what gives more faith to the team, not just from DeMonte, but from the fact that the bottom lane was solid, right? Piglet hasn't really been an LCS starter for years, and there's a lot of skepticism about whether or not he can succeed long-term. And with our incredibly short sample size, it looked pretty good.
Yeah, I really like this DeMonte point, though, because, you know, he's a North American mid laner, right? A very rare breed in the North American LCS. And he did a bunch of interviews afterwards as well. I think he's actually getting pretty good at doing the interviews, by the way. He has a pretty good philosophy about it, and he wanted to approach kind of tackling this North American mid laner issue by taking a lot of risks, you know, being one of these mid laners that does look to create game-changing plays and look to carry for the team, which is kind of crazy when you're seeing him on a team with Hooney, right? And you're thinking, okay, so Hooney's going to be the, you know, hard carry guy taking risks, right? And Piglet.
Piglet took some risks.
Yeah. But I was really impressed with DeMonte, specifically the one versus TSM, where that was a game where, as you're saying, Hooney is getting crushed on the top side. And they're not used to having, you know, this dominant pushing power on the top side to have some pressure with, and he just farms up for the majority of the game on Akali. For he almost gets himself a bounty just by farming up on Akali, and then once he gets the bounty by killing Acadian, like this one game-changing moment while they're behind trying to play defense, you know, he gives up some minions on the top side, he rotates over for the chance at a vision play, which I mean, that's not the consistent play, right? You just take the minions on the side instead, but he gets a big bounty. He is a Akali. He had already been farming super hard, and then he's able to really change the game for his team, and I think kind of create that win where there was not a win before. That, to me, is a very big step for, you know, one of the kind of new-ish guys on the scene, you know, a maligned role of North American mid laner. So, yeah, I think definitely good things for him.
Yeah, and I mean, it was against Bjergsen, right? You know, like, yeah, he's laning against Bjergsen. You're saying he farmed.
So he's on Akali.
He was like, well, he was sitting at, I want to say, 11 or 12 CS per minute. It's like something huge. Like he was over 10 CS per minute, certainly. I don't know exactly where it was lying, but I remember it hitting like 30 minutes. He had like 320, 340, whatever it was. I was like, damn. And then, as you say, he starts picking up kills, and all of a sudden he is rich, and he is taking over the game. But as much as a, you know, malign role or whatever, as you put it, NA mids are, we had another NA mid popping off. Poe Belter was also popping off. I think he also got back-to-back player of the games, I do believe, for FlyQuest. And they're sitting at 2-0 as well. They both had very similar Galio games where they were both dominating on Galio. Both had great flanks on that as well. And then Poe Belter turned in a really strong Lissandra game as well, where he was looking really, really good, really proactive, was able to find another flank in that game that was pretty game-changing. You know, when I saw the Poe Belter interview a while ago where he was like talking about how, oh, on Immortals, he was able to be really proactive and aggressive and make all these big plays and stuff, and he just kind of like couldn't do that on TL. I was kind of scoffing at that. I was like, okay, yeah, sure. But he kind of shut me up this weekend. I think he did look a lot better than a lot of what I had seen in the past. I mean, yes, he had great games on TL. Yes, he was finals MVP, but certainly was really, really impressed by how much of a game changer he was in the first weekend.
And I think Poe Belter has a bit of a history of jumping out of the gates strong, right? I remember at even the beginning of spring last year when he was on TL, we were doing countdown segments about whether or not Poe Belter could be the MVP of the league.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. Remember? I want to ask you this, though, because we mentioned at the top of the show the scheduling point about certain teams starting 2-0. Which 2-0 do you think is stronger, like Clutches over Fox and TSM, or FlyQuest over Golden Guardians and Optic? Because, like, I look at that.
Clutch.
Right? How well do I really believe in FlyQuest yet? No. There's a chance they're going to be in first place because their first game next week is against CLG, who also looked terrible in week one. So I do want to wait. I want to wait and see more for FlyQuest, whereas I think I'm more confident now that Clutch is going to be competing for playoffs, but not necessarily yet for FlyQuest.
I guess for me, for FlyQuest, I'm looking at it from the point of view of this is the team that I had last in my power rankings, right?
So, like, I'm not necessarily Optic down there.
Like, I'm not even trying to say, like, oh God, yeah, FlyQuest is going to win it all. You know, they're going to slam everyone, but they're clearly a lot better than I thought they would be at the very least. So, you know, I'm kind of willing to eat my humble pie on that one, and they look definitely far and away from the worst team, at least in week one.
Yeah, I've been talking to those guys a lot. I think they're definitely going to do decently well. I don't think that's going to be one of the you know, top teams challenging our, like, top four, I guess.
Okay, but you think, like, they should be competing for playoffs.
But I think it's a playoff team, yeah, for sure. I've been hearing so many good things about Santorin specifically for the jungle. And as you said, Pobelter looked really strong coming out. So, yeah, I definitely think that FlyQuest are going to have a bit of an up year this year.
Viper impressed me, too. Like, I wasn't expecting him to do as well as he did. And again, as you say, quality of opponents does matter a lot. But Viper turned in a solid rally game as well as a Sion game. You know, the Sion game, most people are like, okay, well, yeah, it's Sion. Let's see them on a carry. Kind of was the same pattern as Broken Blade, I believe, right? Because Broken Blade played a Sion game. And I was like, okay, you did well, but let's see a carry. And then he played Aatrox and was solo killing him. And he said, I was like, all right.
Yeah, remember we were going to have, like, this weekend was going to be the big test for Broken Blade where he has to go against Someday. And then Huni.
He passed.
He passed the test with flying colors.
He did. I mean.
Maybe even got a gold star from the teacher.
Yeah, I'd give him a gold star for week one. Although I would say towards the end of the clutch game for Broken Blade, he was getting poked down a lot too much. Like, he was never really able to get involved in team fights. And that has been a systemic TSM issue. This is not necessarily saying Broken Blade needed to be the one to fix this, but that is definitely an area where he could have improved.
Yeah, their mid-game transition is, I mean, TSM, they were set up to go 2-0 this weekend, right? They by all means, they had a huge lead in this game. Broken Blade and Acadian, those two were controlling the early game so heavily versus Clutch, killing Huni over and over. And that's why, again, like, we're talking up Demonte so much in that game for the ability to keep Clutch in it and make that turnaround. But also then people will always start to point the fingers at the team that had the lead and be like, okay, you know, look what you did to you know, give that opportunity to Clutch Gaming. So I think the TSM fans got super hyped after the first win, and then they're getting a little bit scared of similar, you know, worries as maybe they saw last year. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not at the level, I think, of last year, but definitely.
Yeah, it hasn't had time to build up yet.
They have to clean up the kind of mid-game transition.
Yeah, I mean, I thought one of the issues was simply just even lane assignments. Like, they got so far ahead in top lane, and then, you know, you're trying to talk about getting poked out, but, like, Broken Blade started going mid, I think, almost to try to match the Akali, kind of got aggressive on the Akali a couple times, had to pop his ult defensively, had to run away. Like, he was losing a lot of his pressure there, and I think, you know, there's more of an argument for that if you're, like, if you're laning against a Sion and you killed the Sion a couple times, all right, go somewhere else. Maybe you're not going to get that much. But, like, killing the Victor over and over and keeping the Victor down is pretty valuable. And I felt like they could have just continued to maybe snowball top lane and push their advantage through there. You know, like, take Rift, take towers, you know, pressure top, just continue doing that style of play. And it felt like a couple times Broken Blade did go to try to challenge Demonte and kind of took a bad end of those trades. And, like, that allowed, I think, Clutch, not only Demonte time to get farm and get strong, but allowed other members on Clutch, I think, time to farm up and really get more there.
All right. What would you say was your favorite match of the weekend, if you guys could pick one? Because I'm remembering this one. I really did enjoy this TSM clutch one because it was kind of this comeback. It was a back and forth where it wasn't just one team dominating the whole time. I also really liked the first game, the Team Liquid Cloud9 one, because I also thought in that one there were moments of power for both Cloud9 and Team Liquid. And it really did depend a lot on kind of the skill shots and the setup.
I'm going TLC9.
TLC9?
I still think after 1 week that these are probably still the two best teams in the league, and they had a close competitive game. That was a finals rematch that also featured like Jensen switching teams and going to the other side.
That was pretty
There's
hype.
Just too much cool stuff in that first game. It's going to be my favorite of week one.
Yeah, I agree. I was trying to think of like a, you know, hipster answer. Yeah. I was like, maybe there's one they didn't think of, but.
I mean, I'll give you a hipster answer. What? Optic Academy taking a game off the COG.
I was like, I actually thought about that, but then I'm like, I don't even want to talk about CLG. They just look so sad. They essentially, like, that's the ninth place Academy team, subs in for LCS with Crown, and then beat CLG. He's like, come on, man.
So Optic has said in the past that they really wanted to do a 10-man roster.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe? Because this was a sense, they said, the Academy guys said they played like two games with Crown.
I mean, I think Crown was practicing with the main roster because I know they certainly have been practicing for longer than, you know, two games, right? He was practicing with the Meteos, Arrow, et cetera, version. Arrow is waiting on his visa, we found out, right? So he wasn't able to get there. So like, okay, well, Arrow's not going to play. And then they're like, okay, well, we want, you know, Asta to really be able to succeed. So we're going to put in his Academy support. And then I don't know, like the logic, I think, got like less sound from there. But it seemed, because then it was like, okay.
Throw them all in. Well, but wait, Crown is the world champion. Keep his ass in there.
Exactly. It's like, okay, well, the bot lane's in there. But then, all right, well, the support has played with Dardox. So Dardox is in there. And then, well, if Dardox is there, let's get the top laner in too. Like, you know, it's kind of like, okay. So I'm not sure if I fully buy into the 10-man roster stuff. I got some questions about that on Twitter as well. Like, you know, is this like following the C9 success? Is this like the future and everything? And I'm kind of like, well, it remains to be seen, right? Because from what everything I had heard, they were very clearly planning on starting, you know, Arrow and Meteos and that version.
Yeah.
And the visas threw a wrench in the gears. So I think it kind of remains to be seen. But I will say at the very least, Asta was impressive.
Yeah.
And I do think that if I'm watching those games as Optic coaching staff, you're like, well, maybe Arrow doesn't start because he hasn't looked that good for a while.
I mean, yeah, Asta, especially impressive considering he had literally, what, two Academy games to his name? And then everything else was like amateur online tournaments and stuff, basically, I think. Maybe some lands in there, but yeah.
Great character from an anime.
But exactly. Like he comes out of nowhere. The first game, he's got this 1,000 gold bounty on his head, just popping off on Israel. It was definitely one of those kind of anime or fairy tale stories there for the opening. For the CLG side, since you brought it up with the you know,
moving towards the O2 teams.
Since you were talking about you know, rosters and is this going to be the new Cloud9 thing? Weldon actually had a really interesting tweet that our writer Elias found and put in our Slack channel. He says, you know, thanks for the support in our season opener versus Optic Academy. We made the decision early this week to play Darshan and Moon versus Optic and Fallen Bandit and Wiggly versus Team Liquid. And then the kicker is, come help pick our lineup and explain how we lost draft at CLG Reddit.
So
they're crowdsourcing.
No, I
don't buy it.
Are they crowdsourcing their lineup?
No,
they're
pandering to their fans.
I'm just wondering.
I don't think they're doing it either.
I think it's just community reaction. It's saying like, hey, be involved. We're gonna listen.
Okay.
And I'm sure at least that's my feeling, right? So maybe they get in there and there's some brilliant analysis and they're like, oh, that's pretty good. Actually, maybe he's right, right? But like that feels as much to me as like, who was your favorite player this weekend on our team or what? You know, it's just, that seems like community interaction.
I think it's a cool way to do it because it does make you like feel like you have some power.
Yeah.
Like if you're an angry fan and you're like,
were you on that
pick
Kobe?
The lineup? All right, I'm going to get in there and pick that lineup then.
Yeah.
So you think it's serious? You don't think it's sarcasm?
I mean,
because when I first read that, like, I've seen so many salty coach tweets over the time be like, come tell us why we lost.
No, but
I heard he was on Reddit answering all those questions and stuff.
Because that changes it.
I'm not saying that they're like literally like, please come help us. What do we do? Pick our lineup and stuff. But I am saying like they're gonna get a lot of feedback, right? And they're gonna take, you know, what they, like Isaac's saying, into consideration. You know, if someone like makes a good point in there, you know, I don't think that it is completely facetious, right?
The COG subreddit is buying in. Like I see a threat, helpful analysis for Weldon, bracket, who reads this subreddit, bracket, to relate to the team. Yeah. And then it's like a 600 word, like eight step plan on how to improve.
This, if you do like have a bad opening like that, that's a kind of genius brand move to like turn your brand into the, oh, you guys get to participate in our team, right? Because that's kind of cool.
Is it short-term genius though? Because if I wrote that 600 page essay and I'm like, you know, great, 600 page. I'm in there, right?
Bad.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like whatever. So you write up all your feedback. You're like, great, I'm doing it. I'm gonna fix CLG. And then chances are they're not gonna implement anything that you have said, right? You know, does that then frustrate you more? Like, does that then alienate you, a fan? I don't know. It's interesting, right? Like, maybe it depends on the person, and maybe that person then something happens and they're like, ah, that was me. I saved CLG.
There is an upvote and a downvote system. So like if the top, you know, the main thing that all the fans decided, right? And everyone's like, yeah, this is the best idea. And then they do the opposite. Then I can see there being backlash.
Yeah.
But like if they incorporate some of the stuff from that top one, see, it feels kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did you post, Kobe?
I haven't yet.
No. I'm a little fascinated. You should start posting on this. Yeah.
Get in there.
Make your own thread. Yeah. Be like, from a longtime COG fan. And then we'll see if they catch on like the Riot Kobe. It's like, this is what I think they should. They should gank mid more, like something.
All right. Get some Amumu in here.
Give the farm to the jungler. Let him pick all the
cannons. Not enough people are giving jungler lane farm because of the reduced experience in 9-2, right?
Yeah.
Right, that can be the tip.
But either way, definitely a disappointing first week for CLG fans. Mm-hmm. Maybe the fans can save them with some coaching. Well, it remains to be seen. But yeah, definitely has got to be a bit of a rough first week, I think, for them. They went 0-2. They didn't look great, I think, in either of the games. You know, there's anytime a team has a bad start, there's going to be lots of criticism thrown. I think that, like, people, though, were expecting, you know, PoE is going to be really strong in the mid lane. The bottom lane is still going to be really strong from last year. And then as long as the top side is okay, then things are going to be going well. But it certainly hasn't kind of panned out that way, at least thus far.
So, yeah, I mean, we can talk about some of the interesting things, right? Not just a general, it was sucky. PoE, I think, is a good topic because of the Xerix pick, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this is PoE. I'm buying it. You know, he has interesting champions. He has interesting builds for his champions. I'm like, okay, where are they going to go, you know, with this Xerath pick? But in the draft, I remember at that point, they already had Camille and one other form of hard engage that was not Leona yet.
There was a Kali.
They locked in Leona later.
They were doing a lot of dive.
It was Camille plus something that was hard engage.
Might have been Kali top, right?
Yeah, huh? It was Darshan played Kali.
I'm not saying, Kali's not the hard engage. It was Camille plus some other hard engage, like maybe... I don't know. But it wasn't the Leona. And then they locked in the Leona like last pick after they saw the Xerath 2. And I was like, oh, God, he is going to have his work cut out for him. Because Xerath is already this super low mobility, you know, long range. He's really going to have to utilize the long range strength and have the team play around protecting against the weakness there. But I think Darduk did a really good job with the Camille specifically.
Yeah.
I don't know why I can't remember what the other...
We did.
So you're saying what Optic had. Optic had Camille, Lissandra, Leona.
Okay, it was Camille and Lissandra that were locked in early. Yeah. And they picked the Xerath into it, which for lane phase, you're like, okay, Xerath versus Lissandra is going to be able to, but...
And it is a lane counter.
Crown did not make it seem that way.
Yeah. Crown played really well. Yeah. You know, he was, I know, dodging a lot of the skill shots, and that's how Xerath is based. And I mean, the Xerath idea felt somewhat half-baked to me because it was, you know, with the Akali, we saw some of the process there. Like, there was some pretty cool stuff where he would become almost in the jungle and Darshan's going in, like, you know, 1v1, and he's assisting with the ultimate and helping Darshan to get kind of 1v1 style of kill from long range. But then as far as the actual team fighting, it felt like, okay, well, everyone else on CLG felt like they wanted to dive in, and the Xerath is trying to like poke and peel back, and there's no one to protect him or play around him, so it felt like it wasn't like fully you know, kind of maybe thought through, or maybe it was just peeled apart by a good play from Optic.
You know how you could put that feedback into action? with the thread on the COG.
www.reddit.com/COG/r/COG.
I'm going to post my picture from WCG with me and Hotshot and Gigi and Chouster and people at the end as like, you know, your signature. How people used to have signatures at the end of the forum post.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then I know the other game he was playing, Electrocute Orianna, which some people were criticizing, but I think that's totally reasonable.
Yeah.
I think it's totally fine, especially with like how strong a lot of the domination runes are, not even just the primary. Like, yeah, you may be are doing a little bit less damage than if you took area or whatever, but because it's less reliable to proc. But like Taste for Blood and Ravenous Hunter are just so damn good now that like I totally buy that. So I think people are kind of unfairly criticizing him in some ways, and I still think, like, individually, he had reasonable performances.
Yeah. I do think the additional thing that stings, though, is that he had the Optic rematch. Like, he clearly left Optic to be to join COG because there was going to be the better team. And then it's like Crown replaces PoE. Uh-huh. And then the Academy team
the
beats
place
PoE's team that he had just joined. So
that hurts.
That hurts. That's not good.
Yeah, this was our version of...
Although we'll say Dardoch on an Academy team is, like, cheating.
Yeah.
The dude's been a top LCS jungler for, like, years, assuming the environment is good, which it almost always is at the start of the season.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, first 4 week, Dardoch is super OP when compared to end of split Dardoch. Okay, Golden Guardians is the next team we want to talk about because there was the stock game, Kobe, that you got to play on Countdown.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, apparently Golden Guardians looked like a great thing to buy.
So Golden Guardians, of course, they were going to be a value pick because they were back-to-back 10th place.
Not because people say invest in gold when the economy is unstable.
No.
Okay, just checking if that was part of your process.
It's like, say invest in gold. My dad, I remember my dad like 10 years ago doing that. During the recession,
yes.
He was like, so.
You have some bars of gold in your closet, Kobe? Yeah.
I didn't buy into it. What was I saying? No, what?
You bought stocks of Golden Guardians
in gold.
Because they were 10th and 10th, so they're more stocks.
So the way that the stocks were set, the prices coming into this year are from last year's performances. Yeah. So they were valued the lowest because they're back-to-back 10th, right? Mm-hmm. However,
I think they were third lowest.
Because they got new players. But they made on paper what everyone's is getting hyped about for big upgrades for players on individual basis, right?
True.
You know, Haunter, he's definitely good. Froggen, people want to be good and come back and, you know, have that form of dominance again. and Ole, right? So all of us on the analyst desk at least bought some stock. I believe I bought one. I originally had one, and then I changed it, and I upped, and I got two. But Mark bought four, whatever our units of stock.
What was the max? Could you buy like 10? Could you buy 5?
11.
So what you could buy about 9. You could technically buy one of each, which is what Dash has, the index.
Right.
But none of us wanted to get a lot of the lower value ones, so a lot of us ended up with 9 and some change.
You can buy 11 Golden Guardians because when we were talking
if you got all of the lowest price one, then you could do that. But Mark split 4-4 with TSM and Golden Guardians and then went in something else.
So he had a rough week.
Yeah. But yeah, so Golden Guardians going 0-2 in the opener. I think a lot of people kind of had high hopes for this being like a revitalization for them because they had a bunch of new content that looked all good. They signed all these players that have pre-existing fans and, you know, pre-existing work to look back on that you can accredit. But it did not come together.
I mean, one of the most concerning things for me, you know, like the stock game, we were kind of trial running it before, right? Uh-huh. And so you guys bought stocks for based on the first 2 weeks. Yeah. We were just talking in this.
I have the richest, by the way, after week one.
There you go.
Best investor.
But so, you still lost money, right?
I have to ask. After this last game.
So we were looking at it for week one, and we were like, if we would do it for just week one, what would you buy to see? Because we were trying to see, okay, would everyone just buy the same thing and it'd be boring? And I was like, well, I would buy 11 Golden Guardians stocks because I would spend all my money in Golden Guardians because based on what people were seeing them as, like, you know, a fifth place team or whatever, their ELO, as you said, was really low. And then for me, I was looking at that as you like the ELO like the discrepancy from where you think they should be, also like multiplied by some factor of how easy the schedule is or how hard the schedule is. Yeah. Their first week is so much easier than their next week, right? Mm-hmm. So like they went 0-2 on the week that was supposed to be free for this team. And now they're going to be going into, I believe it's C9
Cloud and 100 Thieves.
So it's like, for, you know, like I wouldn't have bought that for week two because I would expect them to lose those teams even without having this bad week.
Uh-huh.
So that is really concerning for this team because, you know, they just had their easy schedule and went 0-2. And it's one of the things that really stood out to me for the Golden Guardians losses was it felt like they, like a lot of the teams that succeeded this week really prioritized hard engage, right? We saw a ton of Sion. We saw Camille Gallio be extremely successful. We saw Lissandra. We saw so much engage, 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 engage. FlyQuest, their one draft, Ezreal, and like they had Ornn support, Sion, Camille Gallio, right? It's like everything was clear win conditions. Everything was clear ways to engage. And Golden Guardians was doing like split push Vladimir, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Hauntzer was doing fine. He was doing well in his lane, but you know, the team was falling apart when he would be in a side lane, the other squad would get engaged on and die, or he would get collapsed on and they wouldn't be in position to do it. And it felt like they were trying to run a more complex like strategy, like 1-3-1 and split push styles are just harder to run. You have to be better coordinated. You have to be on the same page. And it didn't feel like they were up to the task. And I felt similarly about both their games where they were not running something that was very cut and dry, very like simple to execute on. And they were not up to the challenge of running like a more complex strategy. And I think a lot of these teams were extremely intelligent, especially early on in the season, to be going with things that are more straightforward, where your team has an extremely clear win condition. I think that's something that Golden Guardians seem to kind of have missed the boat on.
Yeah, I mean, hard engage is good, I think, and Golden Guardians was trying to outplay it, just didn't work out for them. I do wonder, like, we have all these talks about everyone on Golden Guardians having something to prove, right? Ole has something to prove. Hauntzer has something to prove because TSM wasn't going to give him a starting spot. Contracts, definitely 10th place team, something to prove. Froggen, like, how long, like, especially after this week, there's the chance that they go 0-2 again, right? Because next week they play C9 and 100 Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
So very real chance they're 0-4. Like, when does something to prove we're all actually good change to people turning on each other? Because, no, seriously, or the team turning on it because all these players were either discarded from other teams or on the 10th place team, right? Like, I don't want that to happen, but this first week was extremely concerning for me as far as overreactions. You're not going to call them, you know, dead on arrival after week one. Uh-huh. But as Azel said, this was the easy schedule with what looked like one of the most motivated, positive teams.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard for me to say like, oh, they just didn't have enough practice time or they were just surprised by something.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chance they're in for another tough split.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about like, you know, them turning on each other or whatever, but I definitely agree. Like from everything that we had heard, atmosphere was amazing, right?
Yeah, I'd rather say the fans turning on them because
totally,
I feel like
totally.
They're going to have something to prove the whole split.
The
right?
fans
like,
are coming off a 10-10. How can they?
what because they had more. They have expectations for first
How
time.
Dare you get my hopes up with these signings? And
so, yeah. I do think it's easy to fall back into the like, you know, that routine of like, well, we're shit again, right? You know what I mean? Like you, where you are feeling down and you lose the motivation and stuff, that I think can really happen to some of the teams that I think are doing poorly. So hopefully they do not become like afflicted by that if they have a rough second week. Cause I still think this team is a team that has a lot of potential, but I mean, we talked about, there were some stats from this last weekend. It was like only a handful of teams, I don't remember exactly, but I want to say it was like in the ballpark of 3 or 4 teams had ever made playoffs after starting 0-2.
Mm.
I think only maybe one team had ever made playoffs after starting 0-4. And I think that was maybe Cloud9 from last split. I could be misremembering that exactly, but like very, very few teams, if any, have actually made playoffs after starting 0-4. So Golden Guardians would be in for a pretty tough run of it if they do end up losing as expected.
It made me think of that meme. Oh no, we suck again. as soon as you said that. That's all I could picture when your whole thing, I blacked out the rest of what you were talking about. I just imagined Azale doing the,
oh no.
All right, well, 100 Thieves, another team.
Yeah.
Are they saying the same thing, Kobe? Or, well,
oh,
they didn't suck
man.
Before, so.
Kind of. So here's the thing with 100 100 Thieves. They had, to me, when I was looking over all of the schedules for the stock market game, I was like, ooh, 100 Thieves is good value because they have lower ELO. I think they're better than that. But I think they had the hardest schedule for the early game. And I think even continuing, it doesn't get a lot easier.
Okay.
Let's see.
100 Thieves plays TL next? Right off the bat, and then Golden Guardians.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
people are expecting them to be 0-3 after TL, probably.
Yeah. But, so I that's why I didn't put any stock in there, because I was like, oh, these are going to be some super hard matchups for them. Mm-hmm. But then, after seeing week one, Someday definitely performed below expectations. Mm-hmm. He had a really off couple of games there for him. Mm-hmm. And Niski just dismantled him. And then he had the Tilter teleport.
Had a rough go at it.
He had a lot of things going wrong.
They're definitely going to need to have, some strong coaching for this week to kind of recover and have a good mindset to go into next week. The opening week had a lot of errors.
I will say that 100 Thieves during summer split was constantly the team that I'd watch them play and be like, these guys are terrible. And then they'd go 2-0 the next week. Like, they were the most, hey, they've lost this, they had this terrible loss, and then they'd beat TL. Yeah. And then they'd beat the next team. So I am, because of the schedule and because of Someday, Bang, Afremu, like Prawley, all the people on that team, I feel like they're fine. I don't think they're going to be an elite team, right? I don't think they're going to be top two, but I think they're going to be upper playoffs still. It's basically my read. Yeah, he is the big question mark off of week one, but they made it through a year with Ryu not playing amazingly, and we're still a high tier team. So I think they'll be able to come together.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bang was the bright spot for me, though. Like, even though he didn't get to do a lot, when I was watching his play and the Lucian game and the Kai'Sa game as well, he always seemed positioning really well. Like, it seemed like he was doing everything well. It's just the map collapsed completely around him, and there's very little you can do when that happens from so far behind. Someday I would also say that was very concerning for me, because, you know, a lot of people are going to point to Huhi. I think he had the worst performance on the team, certainly. Mm-hmm. But Someday, we have such high expectations for. You know, he was considered by many to be the best top laner in the league last year, or at least up there. And, you know, if he is not going to be performing to that level, then the team can just be made that much weaker regardless of if Bang is an upgrade or not, right? So it's definitely interesting. And I mean, I think back to a lot of last year, like you were saying, Jet, where they definitely had games that didn't look good, but they always seemed to be able to kind of like hang around, get to late game, and win team fights, right? And if you're playing this style, this is something I was thinking about specifically for 100 Thieves, is I think that style of play is much harder to pull off in the 2019 season, because there is so much more gold on the map in the early game. You can't afford, I think, to be bad at laning, to give up these advantages, because those advantages are not as small as they used to be. Because turret plating is in the game, if you are losing turret plates across the map, if you are losing early dragons, which give gold now as well, all these advantages, as well as the early dragons being stronger than they used to be, it becomes so much that I think it's so much easier to just snowball the game out of control. So I just think that their play style, and yes, they have changed players and maybe they won't default to that play style, but that play style is just plain worse this year. And I don't think you can really pull it off in the same way, because that 4K gold lead is maybe a 6K or a 7K gold lead. And those dragon stats are going to be that much more powerful. And then great, you take that one team fight, but at that point, you're just too far down and it doesn't matter how well you play it.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the kind of old guard Korean teams had this kind of similar sentiments about why they weren't succeeding as much, at Worlds and this year as well, because the game has been intentionally sped up a bit. There's also the minion pushing advantage. If your team has the level advantage and, tower's taken, then they're going to be easier to end it out. Now the Baron and Elder Dragons spawn, respawn quicker as well.
And so, you can only carry two control wards, right? The reduction in vision overall.
But I do think at least for 100 Thieves, on their opening, like, difficult schedule here, like, if you're going to get some unforced errors out of your system, I guess, on the stage, that's the game to do it against. So I feel like that was the low end for Someday. And there's a reason why we're like, wow, that's an underperformance, because we still think that he'll be able to have, better ones. So I definitely agree with Jack. Like, just week one, definitely can perform much better.
Week two, also, we're going to be moving on to patch 9.2.
Oh, baby.
Switch things up a little bit.
The jungle nerf.
Okay, you want to talk about the jungle nerf? I want to talk about some of the stuff Korea did last night on patch 9.2.
Go ahead.
There's definitely some clarifications that I think need to be made. AP Jarvan support got played by Spirit twice last night. And they 2-0'd, actually.
That it did.
They were victorious.
That it did.
So, yeah, what do you guys think about AP Jarvan support, Azale?
So I played a game with this yesterday before the LCK games happened. And I literally just thought this guy was, like, inting me. And, I didn't really say, like, I get the idea. I went into the game, I saw Jarvan support. I was like, okay, he's just going to play, you know, like, regular all-in AD Jarvan support, whatever. But he did do Flag Max. He was airy, so I assumed, you know, okay, he started Spell Thief. So I'm like, okay, well, there's AP scaling on the E. You just poke with the E. I get that. I didn't see the LCK game, so I can't really comment on how it played out there. But I did at least understand some of the ideas behind it, that you have some poke in lane and then you're a semi-reliable engage. I will say it worked very horribly in the game that the guy played it. Doesn't mean that it's bad. Just means that this guy maybe didn't know what he was doing. But, you know, it is at least interesting. And, you know, we were talking about this, like the airy interaction. Like I was getting shielded, I guess, from... I wasn't sure if it was from like the W slow trigger, right, like the heal on hit, or you were saying there's an interaction with the E, like,
yeah, I would need to test
speed
it
that can shield you, because I was getting random shields.
Yeah, I saw a comment that the attack speed bonus from the flag is enough to give you the airy proc basically that then shields you, and it's a very high base damage spell that's fairly long range and fairly spammable, so I could see you be able to poke people out with the AP Jarvan. I feel like it needs a lot more testing, and the fact that it got played in LCK normally makes you think like this thing is definitely legit, but this is also Spirit. The team with Spirit who's just he's played 3 more Ghana games, an Annie game, a Nico game, a Karthus game, a Nocturne game, and 2 support Jarvan games. That's been his year in different positions. So like this is definitely not your standard LCK only play the busted stuff, but at least it's exciting. I like seeing weird new stuff like that.
I mean, Spirit was also last year, he was doing the Lulu jungle and everyone was like, oh my god, that's so busted, so crazy, but it never like took over solo queue. So I mean, people should be a little bit worried, but I don't think you have to be super.
And it could just be very matchup specific. I don't know what he actually played against, but like we were laning against the Soraka, so like he's eating the AD, and then
that's not gonna work.
It doesn't do anything, right? The Soraka's just healing him up, and then the Soraka went silence max, and it's just like doing way more damage with the silence than he could do with the flag. I'm like, okay, this is terrible.
Yeah, maybe you got a bad apple then.
Maybe you got a bad apple. I'll have to see if I ever get a good apple of AP Jarvan support. I really doubt it.
Next time you have Spirit on your team.
Maybe I can get Spirit to queue up with me. He can show me how it's supposed to go.
All right. The jungle experience nerfs have come upon us.
You've been playing with them for a week. Yeah, whole week plus a solo.
You can definitely feel them. So it's not like you are completely starved and, you know, you can't function as a champion and we're back to the farm 5 hearts of gold, you know, stages of the game or whatever. But it is definitely significant, right? I feel like, especially as it gets later, because the changes are, the experience is going to update every other level now. Plus 25% instead of plus 50%. So as the game gets longer and longer, I've been altering how I think about the value of me going to a camp first and then going to a lane or going to a play or going to my team. And now I'm more willing to give up forgo my camp and go support a possible, you know, aggressive looking lane that's going over here, or I think that my team is going to int in the dragon pit, and so I gotta go join them.
Camaraderie,
for that little fiasco. It's kind of interesting because you are definitely lower level the majority of the game. The early game is still pretty much the same. Feels about fine. You can have a really strong, you know, early influence, but it does, as you past level 6 and stuff, as you really start to get these respawns going, it does feel very, very difficult to keep up with solo laners.
Yeah.
The only time I've been like even levels of solo laners is when I'm really getting a lot of kills And a lot of it is through, you know, successful ganks and not, you know, not actually farming that much. So it's definitely a change. Whereas previous, you know, last season, if I was doing something like that, I would also be highest level in the entire game, not just, you know, tied with solo laners.
Yeah.
Because I could also insta farm camps because you would be so ahead, you'd yeah. have a lot of damage, and then you'd do that and getting kills. So yeah, I've started just playing Nunu, Ivern, Sejuani. Jarvan is the one like aggressive pick that I've
you go
been
AP
using.
With
it. I'm not yeah. using AP. Don't worry. Don't worry. I'm not doing AP Jarvan. I think that regular Jarvan, AD Jarvan,
he's good.
I'm going AD into supportive tanky stuff like Knights okay. Bound stuff.
So you
like
do
that.
Warrior and Devout.
I just go Warrior.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Warrior to me is enough to get the early oomph out of being an aggressive jungler. Mm-hmm.
You're going Electrocute still?
Yeah, still go Electrocute because that makes all of your ganks. But after Warrior, then I transition into stuff like Knight's Vow. You know, sometimes I get Asterix later on, stuff like that. And that seems to be working pretty well. You're just, you know, I'm not looking to be the point man for killing people anymore.
Yeah.
I'm trying to set up my teammates. And when you're in promos, or I mean, you're in promotional or provisional, there we go. The placement matches, that's a real roll of the dice. So it's feeling...
And those games are worth so much now.
Yeah, I'm trying to communicate
so I
a
feel
lot.
Like they've always been worth that much.
I know, but
it's just been hidden from you.
So I like that I can see it. But I will say, so like I'm doing my placements or whatever, right? And I'm in plat one or whatever now. And I know if I win like two of my next three games for my last ones, then I will start in diamond, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, God, do I want to skip, like not have to deal with diamond promos, you know, skip the 5-game promo. That feels so good. So it's like, if I lose one of those games that I don't need to, it's going to feel so frustrating because it's not going to feel like losing one game. You're not only losing the like 50 or whatever LP, the big LP gains you get, you're having to go through a 5-game promo series. So I'm like, you just lost me like 8 games. That's a lot.
I will say, actually, this might be, I know it's a mixed opinion. I like the new placement system a lot more than the old one.
I think it's better, but I still care. I'm still going to be frustrated if I lose.
Yeah.
There's obviously a placement system where you're not frustrated if you lose.
I know. I'm not saying it's not a good system.
We have removed placements. Yeah. Now you're no longer frustrated when you lose
everyone
placements.
Everyone placed challenger. Everyone feels great.
Yay. And then
first
you can be iron challenger
challenge.
And bronze challenger and gold challenger. I'm challenger 17. So the jungle thing's really interesting to me, Kobe, because I do feel like that it has probably been an OP role for a while. Like if I just think about just the fact that it's become an expectation that the jungler is able to keep up with solo lanes, like relatively normally when they're a position that gets to choose where they go. And also because I don't like playing like high damage junglers personally, it's probably more okay for this to feel right to me. Because they're still going to be super strong early and they're still going to have a large game influence. And the goal didn't change, which I think changes decision-making around jungle camps as well.
Yeah, so I would say that jungler definitely has been one of the more powerful, but I definitely would not say OP.
You think
mid laners have
mid
all,
is the most powerful.
I think mid laners, I can't remember a time.
Are we talking solo queue or pro?
Solo queue.
We're talking solo queue right now.
Yeah.
I think mid laners have been extremely powerful as well. And to me, it's a lot of similar reasons. One has been because, of course, as a solo lane, they can get a lot of experience. But also, mid lane is very well positioned to also roam around. So you have a lot of these freedoms that top lane doesn't necessarily have with all the TP nerfs and stuff like that. And a good mid laner also does translate to jungle control. So I feel like mid lane and jungle are constantly linked in terms of power because they do rely on each other and a lot of the objectives kind of play off of both of those. But yeah, I mean, there definitely have been times of fluctuating. Oh my God, we have to camp bottom because AD carries are so strong. We have to play around them or like, oh my God, you know, AD carries, ha, what a joke. And it's definitely been a roller coaster for those ones. But consistently, I think jungle and mid have been very strong.
It's interesting because, you know, it's like I play a lot of different roles. So like I've never really been bothered by jungle. I like jungling. I've never really bothered by it when I'm playing the other lanes as much. But I do see like a tremendous amount of complaining about, you know, people would always complain about red smite junglers being able to 1v1 them. And
People complain about every aspect of junglers if they're not junglers.
Yeah, yeah.
For the record, I'm going to put that out there.
Again, I'm not even saying I think that it like that they needed some big nerf or whatever. But that is one of the things that I just in general see the most complaints about in my games. And when I'm watching pro streams and challenger streams, people hated that they could get 1v1 yeah. soul laner by red smite jungler. So I do understand like that thought process where it's like, okay, you know, if a jungler just has to farm his side of the jungle and then show up and he's stronger than you in the solo lane, then it's like, that's mm-hmm. always a guaranteed or feels much more guaranteed to be able to do that than it does, you know, to be able to lane, you know, where you might be in a tough matchup or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like,
yeah.
you know, that getting that like XP getting nerfed just feels like it does push people more to supportive style junglers and tank style junglers, which have not really been much in the meta at all. There's like one tank in the meta right now, and it's Sion. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. maybe that.
So you know, Swanee kind of in the jungle.
Yeah. And I guess yeah. we've seen maybe.
Yeah.
Like,
I would say Nunu is a tank as well. So yeah. And Nunu is definitely yeah. good. Actually, Nunu has the highest win rate right now.
There's like a solo queue thing, but then there's also how will it actually influence pro? Because yeah. I think some of the biggest. Cases in solo queue were literally the junglers that would be like 200 CS at 18 minutes because not only do they power farm the jungle and get red smite, they then take lanes and then
yeah.
like that scenario almost never happened in pro.
Yeah.
Right. So now I'll be curious to see if like
it even changes
the
pro.
Camille is exactly the same execution. It's just she's half a level lower or something like that.
Yeah. Because they still have to play around vision very heavily. They still have to be waiting
yeah.
and covering their laner as they're pushing in and waiting for counter ganks and doing yeah. all those things. So they were never really like the like, pure hard farm style.
I think it affects solo queue more than pro, but it will still affect pro.
Yeah.
Also, here's an idea. Whenever people complain to me about, jungle's broken because, you know, look, you know, all these high rated, you know, top five or whatever people, four of them are junglers or something like that. To me, jungle is the role that can have the most variance. So that means that if you are a very good jungler, it's a very big difference between a baseline jungler on the enemy team. Whereas if you're a laner and you're a very good laner versus a baseline laner on the enemy team, it's not going to be as big of a discrepancy because the jungler, the very good one, is going to affect so many different areas of the map that the role itself might not be overpowered. The difference between a good person in that role and a baseline person in that role might be bigger. That's a theory. Mull that over for a while and get back to me on that.
I agree in principle. I think there's going to be some exceptions as there are to every rule. Because I think if it's like, I'm your average or bad top laner and I'm playing against a really good top laner and I pick Sion, then I'm like, okay, yeah, like the difference isn't going to be as big. But if I'm like, all right, I'm playing against Challenger Riven one trick, Yasuo, right? You know, and then it's like, I'm going to be 0-10 and he's going to take the whole map.
But my point is,
that's going to be all you. The other four people won't experience that dude until like 20 minutes into the game.
Yeah. Is that true though? Or can they not roam around, right?
They do, like, but it's just slower than the jungle.
And my point is that you cannot do that in the jungle. I can't say, I'm just going to play Nunu, maybe the Sion of jungle, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm just going to pick Nunu or... okay, I think Ivern is way different. I think you're super underestimating Ivern.
As far as base level of contribution,
I think
Ivern's base level of contribution is fairly high.
All right, I'm going to go with Sejuani and Nunu, but it's not the same, right? If you pick Sejuani or Nunu, right, the super good jungler, it is going to really take advantage, I think, in a way that the lane Sion doesn't get taken advantage of as much.
Yeah.
All right. Guys, want to move on?
Yeah.
Yeah. The one other thing I will touch on the patch, have you guys played against or seen much York? Because I think New York is actually cheap and should be played in pro. Because the new ultimate, you have so much control over it. Like one of the biggest problems with York was, especially like in earlier stages, you essentially couldn't fight people at all without your ultimate. And when they force you to pop your ultimate just marches down the lane and then suicides the turret. They wait till it dies and then they kill you. Mm-hmm. And then you're zoned out or whatever. Right now you can actually leash your ultimate off the turret and just walk back as it gets to the turret and just be laning with your ultimate until they actually kill that thing. And
it has a lot of health.
It's actually,
and it does a lot of damage
too. so if you're actually being smart about how you're using your ultimate and not allowing them to fight it near the turret where you can't actually fight back, it is hard to kill, and that thing does a lot of damage. So it's like, a lot of his weaknesses are have been mitigated from that, mm-hmm. Because you can drag that thing around. You can still throw it down a side wave like a banner minion by reactivating it, but you can have the ultimate popped and then your jungler needs help in the river. Now all of a sudden your ultimate is coming into the river with you with the ghouls and you're going to fight and you're going to be at full power there. So like even his team fighting is so much better than it used to be because you can split push and bring the ultimate with you to that dragon fight or to that Rift Herald mm-hmm. or to whatever.
I have a question then. Is it time to bring back jungle Yorick?
Maybe.
There was an Oceanic player that was a jungle Yorick one trick and I copied him. It was like a year ago.
Try it out.
And it was actually really strong.
I think, if it was strong then, he's just playing better now. Okay. Like the ultimate has more health. The AI is better. This thing can follow you around. You can choose to release it.
If I'll have less experience, at least I'll have my ultimate here. Yeah. And my ultimate can go fight people. I'll be like a Pokemon master.
Exactly.
And the best thing about Yorick is that a lot of people still don't know what he does.
They don't understand.
Yeah, so, like, if you learn how to use Yorick, boom, just instant advantage.
Yeah. I mean, we saw a tiny bit of it from Optic last year in LCS.
Yeah.
I think it should legitimately be being used in pro. I think it can really destroy.
Oh, go leave a note on the CLG Reddit.
Yeah, could be a good pick for Darshan.
Maybe they're watching. Maybe someone else can tell them. But I'd be excited to see if it comes out because I think it's actually good now for the legit good pick.
All right, time to move on. Right. I actually have some very big news that we haven't talked about yet because we didn't want to spoil the rest of the episode and didn't want to take attention away from the show. Some people noticed that I wasn't on LCS last week.
Yeah, I noticed.
Kobe noticed. He was on Countdown. And the reason for that, actually, I want to tell a story first, actually. When I joined Riot in 2012, I joined it as a QA analyst on the live design team because that was my way in to potentially one day becoming a game designer is what I kind of had in my head of what I really wanted to do at Riot. But then I'd done a little bit of casting before joining Riot. Esports started spooling up and there was this like massive, massive opportunity to be a shoutcaster since I was a former pro player. I was relatively articulate and I was like perfectly positioned to be the color caster for like esports basically. Fast forward 7 years, I feel like we have a ton of good color casters now. Got two other ones right here that we do the dive with. It's really good. And I realized that I still really wanted to do game design. So you guys have known about this, so you can fake your shock faces, but it's new information for the public. But I'm actually going to be joining the Summoner's Rift team, aka like the live balance team, and be a game designer on League of Legends. Yeah. It's like super big news. It's like, I'm super excited to do it and also super sad to be no longer full time on esports. Mm-hmm. And yeah, let's have like a quick conversation about it.
It's actually crazy. Cause you say we knew about it.
We found out last week.
Yeah. I've only known about it for about a week.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Was it?
It's the break.
And time really flies. Okay. But
I thought it was just last week. Yeah.
It was such a shocking thing to hear.
Yeah.
Because like you say, we've been doing this for so long.
Yeah.
I moved down to Los Angeles in 2013 to join you.
Yeah.
And you
were the first color caster that had like actually been a pro player other than me. And we were like, we're the two color casters on LCS.
And up until that point, I was doing like online TSM tournaments and stuff. But Riot invited me down here like on this like contract, maybe tryout basis or whatever. And Jat and Riv were the ones that welcomed me in 2013 when we created the LCS.
Yeah.
Like we've been doing this for so freaking long. And for 6 years, it feels like the majority of my adult life.
Yeah.
I have spent the majority of my weeks with you, whether it's weekend or weekday. Like so much of my time has been working with Jat, and like we've created, you know, different ways of doing color casting so we could get, you know, the widest possible audience. And we've come so long. Ever since I was told that this was happening, I was looking back at like old pictures and stuff. And we had two different color shirts each for all of the casters. And it was just a matter of which one you're wearing that day or whatever. We had, you know, like baby Reginald and Hotshot in the studio. And it just, when I first heard about it, it just seems like things are going to be so different It does feel like a very big change for me.
Mm.
To not have
and you're
Gat
still
there.
Casting.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
I'm starting like I'm a new career casting. In game design.
I feel like
design.
I'm breaking up my longest relationship I've ever had. Yeah. We've traveled the world.
We
together.
Have traveled the world, dude. It's been like 7+ years.
It's definitely crazy. I mean, we found out at the same time, right?
Yeah.
We got told, and we're both immediately like, A, what the fuck? B, like, you know, like, what does this mean? And we're like, our brain starts spinning. It's like, what is, you know, what's next? What changes? What happens? Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy for you, but it's you know, it's crazy for the other casters. It's crazy for the scene. I think, you know, you've had a big impact on our lives. Obviously we're friends. We've spent a lot of time together.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't been on the team casting as long, but I mean, I've been casting with you for 3 years
now. At this point you've already been here like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Right?
And watched LCS for years before that. And, you know, it's been really cool. Like, you guys were my two favorite casters watching LCS. and then,
all right.
You know, and getting to work with you guys and learn from you guys has been like a really special experience, you know, and getting to do the dive with you guys. We're like, God knows how many episodes in, what, 60, 70, something like that. We've been doing this for a long time. So, I mean, it's crazy. Like, on one hand, I'm like, I wish you the best. On the other hand, I'm like, fuck you, you should stay. So it's, I mean, it's been a pleasure, but definitely feels pretty surreal.
Yeah. And I know that you have wanted to do this for a long time.
Exactly.
You know, you're going to have weekends now.
I mean, that's one thing to watch LCS with.
So that, yeah. There you go.
Instead of work
that's
LCS.
That's not making guest appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll still like occasionally make guest appearances on the dive or this or that, or potentially on broadcast. I mean, as far as like what I'll be doing, I will be on the balance team for game design. So I'll still be able to like touch the game and be around League. At first, like very small scale stuff, because I haven't actually learned any of the tools and like got to train up and like get better, and all that stuff is super exciting, because even before I played League of Legends, I had a big interest in game design. Like when I played Guild Wars, I was just like fascinated with the way you balance that game or the tuning of the game. And there's just so much more to game design beyond just numbers, as far as the way a kit works and the way mechanics work and the way that works with thematics and the way that works with perception, and like so much really cool stuff that I'm super excited to dive into. It's like, I feel super spoiled in the fact that I actually had the option to have a kick-ass job as a shoutcaster for 7 years, where you get to talk about a video game for a living and have people be like, "You said cool stuff about that video game," and be like, "Thanks, man. Like, that's just amazing." And now to be able to try something while still in the gaming sphere, like exercising completely different muscles, is something that's really exciting to me. And it's disappointing to leave shoutcasting. And like, I'm sure it'll be disappointing in a bit of an adjustment period, but like, you guys are still here. I thought High did a really good job week 1 on the desk. I know they have plans for Countdown down the road to keep the product fresh and keep a lot of new voices coming in. And there's so many more voices now than there was 7 years ago, which I think is really good, right? So I'm just really excited to kind of go try something like game design. It'll be super fun.
We are going to have some of those new voices on the dive moving forward as well.
The dive may, Jet may be dead, but the dive the dive is not.
So he's not dead yet, but if we don't enter the golden age of game balance from here moving forward,
remember,
I'm coming straight for you, right, Jet.
Everyone knows who to flame on Twitter now. Because his Twitter is no longer for shoutcasting. It's purely to receive negative feedback on his balance changes.
Yes, it's true.
That's what it's for.
So, I have done one change.
Oh!
Yeah. And I've
Was
already,
it the Jungle SP?
No. I've already seen like Reddit comments complaining about it. And I'll give reasoning now. Just may as well start communicating. So I nerfed Lissandra.
Okay.
I got to do that one. Mm. So it was basically targeted of looking. It was a very high elo or pro play focus nerf. And every mid lane champion on 9-1 with a higher presence than Lissandra was significantly nerfed, like previously, all of them, like Galio, Aatrox, everything that was above it. And then also just thinking of like, do you really want Lissandra in every game, especially when there's not a huge amount of counterplay and there's not like a huge amount of skill expression. So you want to hit Lissandra a little bit. And the two nerfs that I did, I ended up taking 40 damage at max rank off of the E. So
Okay.
That's like the a claw, few per level, claw, but it's, yeah. it's actually fairly rarely used for damage.
Yeah.
And then increase the mana cost of Q by 8 at max rank, so very gradual. So pretty small nerfs.
Yeah.
And the reason for that was that Lissandra's most of the time in pro play are either taking minion dematerializer or mana flow band, so they're already specking into mana a bit, but they're almost always able to go proto belt, mm-hmm. and it doesn't feel like they're paying a very appropriate cost for doing proto belt, since Lissandra succeeds or fails by like push and roaming, yeah. right? So slight mana cost, make it a little bit harder to
pay for it, roam,
or you build Ludens so you're allowed to do it, and then the E is just like this really high damage, I feel like long range wave clear tool that people use it for, because if you rank it up, the cooldown will still be the same. And like little chips in those two areas hopefully make her like an acceptable presence and not just like the dominant mid laner. Okay. And if Aftershock gets nerfed, Lissandra gets buffed again for all those people that are worrying about it, because she's like super reliant on that keystone.
So we will judge you based on the Lissandra presence coming
that
in.
That one on 9-3, because yeah. that's when the nerf
okay,
hits.
9-3.
Yeah.
You get a soft pass for that one.
Yeah. That's we'll yeah. let you off all the hook right. for that, but. Yeah, I mean it's definitely crazy. Hopefully we will we're planning on having you back on the dive.
For not
those
next week.
For those of you not next week. For those of you who are wondering what's going to happen with
week.
The show, we have some plans that, you know, the show is not going to be the same. We know it's not going to be the same. You know, Jad is going to leave a hole there, but we are planning some things that we think are going to be fantastic that you guys hopefully will really enjoy. And we're going to mix things up a bit, bring in some different people, and hopefully it'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully you'll still enjoy it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But what we're not going to try and do is replace Jad one-to-one.
Yeah.
We're going to bring in a lot of special guests. So we'll have more targeted discussions, I think.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to miss you a lot, man. And we do have a video.
I heard about this right before the show. I haven't seen it.
we have not seen it either.
Yeah,
our wonderful production team did cook
Let's
it up.
Let's take a look.
So yeah. we'll see if they can pull that up for us.
Check this out.
But we have a video.
Put that one, dude.
Look back on some memories.
Jet. Wait, who's Jet, though?
Who's Jet? Hello?
Yeah. I don't know who Jet is. I know Rivington.
Let's start with number one then.
I'm in it. Let's go.
Josh Leisman. My in-game name's Jat, and I play jungle.
How many fingers can I cross right now? I got all of my hands crossed. Can you do your pinkies?
No, almost.
Really?
A little bit.
Wow.
Would you rather eat chocolate flavored or poop favorite chocolate?
Oh!
Chocolate flavored poop.
Yeah,
it's chocolate basically flavored chocolate poop. Syrup.
100%.
But if you're trying to climb in solo queue, find the best path, do the same gank every game, and you'll get good at it.
And that does it for an insane day two of the 2013 NALCS Summer Promotion Tournament.
Jet, you look great today. We have the matter of the bet to settle here, and take a spin.
What? Just leap in. Who made this slide? Where'd you get that picture?
Or it's dead. Yeah, right?
We can still. I'm Riv, and for Kobe, Freak, and the entire live broadcast crew, I'm not Riv. Tomorrow's Mother's Day, by the way.
We have to note that we lost the dive
before you bet.
And we will make good on it.
Take it from me. Don't miss out on this deal.
We're done now.
Over.
Over, over.
Are you stupid?
Anyway, I did not forget about this. Let it be said.
Slow down, Jack.
You better be happy about this
look
because...
You look good.
Did actually win the bet, I would have to say.
Thank you for joining us for This or That with Kobe and Jack.
We'll get it.
Thanks, Rob.
I just want to say I will be starting the stream soon for people who want to see a jungler other than St. Fish's stream. I think I bring a lot of different things to the table, and hopefully it'll be a good time.
Oh my goodness. I will be starting the stream soon, by the way. Yeah, 7 years ago. Oh man, PTL. As well.
Yeah,
we did that show for years.
Yeah, it reminded me of a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, that's where This or That started, by the way, on PTL.
Yeah, we used to have a lot of like special little segments on that too, like dressing up. We had like dartboard things, and
we had like the, what was that one where we had to like buzz each other and have
yeah,
like 30
yeah.
seconds.
Oh, yeah.
That was a hard one to do. I don't know about that.
Our little league game show, kind of. Yeah. Man, there were a lot of moments in there that that I didn't like have in my mind as like, oh, this is gonna be in the video. But as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. Jet said he was Riv. That was like our first year.
Oh my god. Yeah, that was when I sucked at prompter. So I want to tell the story on this because this kind of gives you an example of how far we've come. So our old studio, we had an interview lounge, the desk, and a telestrator. And only two people at the desk. And we only had four casters. But for the most part, like, you'd only have two casters on at the time. And then, like, maybe someone would come in an interview. Maybe someone would come in for a telestrator. Yeah. So the way this one worked is you had Kobe and Riv casting. After the game, Riv does an interview, and I'm supposed to do a telestrator segment. The telestrator breaks while they're doing the interview. So in order to end the show, they're like, we can't just go to a single shot of Kobe on the desk. Jack, get over there. Go sit in Riv's chair and close out the show. And the writer, bless him, like, tried to switch everything from Riv to Jat. So, like, every slug in the prompter would switch, but he missed that one. He missed the I'm Riv at the very end. So it lulled me into this sense of security reading the prompter that everything had been corrected as I was closing out the show until the very last line.
Anchorman level stuff.
Yeah. Oh, it trolled me so hard.
It was so perfect. And Anchorman was around that time too.
Yeah, exactly.
So those were all the memes.
That's hilarious. That's actually so much better than what, see, like, I didn't know that story. Watching it, I just thought you were just trolling and just pretending like doing the Riv like throw off or whatever.
That's what it said. And they used to say like I'm Riv and for blah 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 blah. Yeah. Now they just say like and thanks to the whole broadcast crew because it was like if you named every talent every time, it'd be like thanks to Azale, Kobe, Jat, Freak, Ovaly, Mark Z,
Zareen.
It was funny because right after that one, I think was the one where like someone threw it to me at the telestrator too with the wrong name or whatever.
Yeah, and you're like
who is it? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's man. Kobe, it's me.
We had a lot of like funny hiccups during the first year because no one knew what they were doing, right?
Esports were janky back then. Yeah,
right? It was like, all right, we got to make a league. Call it the LCS.
League of Legends Legendary League.
And I was like, I don't like my desk job. Can I please come down there and join? Engineering's kind of fun, but I'd rather play.
And back then, so many of the people like had no experience ever doing it, right? Mm-hmm. The first time I ever cast anything was at BlizzCon, which when I think back was ridiculous. I'm like, how did they let me do that job? Yeah.
My first cast was actually, I was attending WCG as a player in 2011. And then, like, Joe and D-Man were the two WCG casters. And, like, Joe had to go do a different game, but they wanted to broadcast a third place game. So D-Man was just, like, hanging out in the lobby with people, say, does anyone want to cast a game with me? And I'm like, I'll hop in. And we had one microphone in, like, a back room with a CRT monitor, and we just pass it back and forth throughout the game. And then he left, like, halfway through the series because he had to go cast another game. And I think we left Scar there. So it's interesting.
Do you remember some of the – so when we first started also, like, we had to define what casting was going to be for League of Legends. Mm-hmm. Do you remember some of the exercises we did? The one that stuck in my mind the most is when Kim made us read Shakespeare just with our eyes on, like, a scrolling prompter. Yeah. And then while we're reading that, tell a story to the person next to you. And then afterwards, the person next to you would have to, like, Or the person next to you was the one reading. They would have to then tell, like, repeat your story. It was like a super simple story.
So I think you're mixing up.
I walked my dog.
I think you're mixing up.
I'm mixing up
tasks.
Some of it.
Yeah, because we definitely did the Shakespeare imprompter to try and make it sound natural.
Uh-huh.
But then the other one was you sit back to back to someone and you make up a story
while they're reading something.
No, both people do it at the same time.
Oh, okay,
and then afterwards, you're supposed to
stories.
Tell them what each other's story is.
That was so
to
hard.
To practice active listening, because a lot of times you're distracted on something and you still need to be able to be like, that's to prevent the classic caster like, you're absolutely right, Riv, and just like carry on when you haven't been able to follow what they're saying.
Especially when people are starting, one of the things people get tripped up on so much is if someone talks in their ear from your producer's talking to you or something
like that.
So, you know, Kobe would be like, yeah, this dragon fight's really important. And someone's talking to me, like, you know, someone will be talking in your ear. And when people aren't used to that, they're just like deer in the headlights, don't know what they're saying, comes back. And your caster's just looking at you like you're supposed to say something. And you're just like,
I just finished, dude.
Yeah.
I could have sworn there was one where, like, you're telling me a story while I was reading something. And then I had to repeat back at the end what your story was. And I was
maybe we mixed the games and I just forgot about it. Or you dreamt it. And you
okay.
Might
well, it was too hard, and I yeah. couldn't even remember the game.
Yeah, Super Weeks, we were talking about beforehand. People forget Super Wednesday. That was the first time we did Super Weeks, because NALCS used to be Thursday, Friday, the very first year. But they, like, didn't have enough weeks for how many games they wanted to play, because it was a quad-round robin best of one with eight teams. Anyway, it meant that, like, once a year, you did 20 games on a weekend instead of eight.
Yeah.
And they just decided to put 12 of them on Wednesday for what is the first time we did it. And we did 12 games. We only had four casters.
Yeah, it was insane, actually.
Yeah, it was rough. Anyway.
Whew.
It's pretty crazy.
I'm sure there's times to reminisce and be nostalgic. It's not like I'm going anywhere far away.
Yeah.
Literally going across the street to the other office.
That's pretty far.
Pretty far. Yeah. There's some people over there that.
And how long that light takes?
Yeah,
takes a long time.
I've really enjoyed doing this, and I love the fact that some of the things that I'm probably most proud of is, like, even though casting is one thing, and that's like a massive team, I'm really proud of, like, this show. I think The Dive has been super cool to do with you guys. When we started it, we wanted it to be the show that, like, we were able to control and have longer form conversations and get more of ideas out there. Cause I know early on we felt almost restricted and like, well, I have to fit everything within the confines of the broadcast. And it would feel wrong to go on a 7-minute tangent about, you know, COG subreddit talking with Weldon. Like, that would never fit in a broadcast, but it's a really fun conversation to have on The Dive. So the fact that we've had this place for going on 3 years now is really cool.
My favorite part about The Dive is it originally was Jat's idea, and he started coming to us to get us on board and, like, talk it out. And then, like, we kind of built it into being this type of show. And once we had built out that idea, and we were like, okay, now this is what it's going to be. Then we brought it to content team and producers and everyone.
What's this story, Kobe?
What's the danger story?
And here we are today.
Yeah,
exactly.
So
yeah, that's one of your favorite.
All lives happily ever after,
and it just worked out.
So
they love the idea, and here we are today.
Would you like to give your?
I would say our current producer definitely loved the idea.
Yeah. Our current producer is fully behind it.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's supported us. He's the wind beneath our wings.
Trey's always fighting
Brian,
for us.
Brian, Cassidy, the whole team that helps work on the show.
It's been a hell of a run. You know, we started the show with the idea of just, we were always talking at our desks all day anyway, right? So do the same thing that we're doing at our desks and just slap a camera up, and it's been a hell of a ride. So you can sign us off one more time.
The Dive and this or that aren't going anywhere.
That's true. They will continue.
Moving somewhere else. So that will do it. Thank you guys for this episode of The Dive. I'll be back for this or that if you watch it tomorrow as well. So that'll be kind of the last thing. That's done for this episode of The Dive and my time on the show. Thank you again for joining me. Flame me on Twitter as much as possible, at RiotJat. Also, I'm on Instagram. I'll be very communicative with all this stuff.
Make sure to follow him, though.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And this show will be back next Wednesday. Also, make sure you're tuning into NALCS, or rather the LCS now. That'll start Saturday at 2 o'clock with Countdown at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. See you then.